Richie Neal, always great to talk to my congressman and who I get to vote for. Let me ask you this, Richie. What do you make of this mess with the Scalia nomination? It seems outrageous to me that that the Republicans are doing what they're doing.
Well, I think that even many of us who have been here for a long time have been surprised by the boldness of Senator McConnell's statement and the idea that the members of the Judiciary Committee on the Republican side would buy in. The president has a constitutional obligation to nominate a successor to Justice Scalia. And I understand the principle here of advise and consent, but not to miss the point that it seems to me as though they're leaving that principle behind because they're not about to even offer any advice or consent because they're not even going to meet with the nominee.
I just find the chutzpah factor to be so great here that I can't understand how they're taking the risk that they're taking. Look, let's say that Hillary Clinton becomes the president or Bernie Sanders, but Hillary Clinton will probably be the nominee. And let's just say she beats whoever they put up. It doesn't look like they have a sterling group there. So that means that whoever is the next Democratic president would get three or four, maybe even, nominees. Why would they take the chance in not making the best deal possible now with Obama?
Well, I think it's an example of what more and more drives the political discourse in America, and that's the effort of the two major political parties to satisfy just the base of their respective parties. And you can see that talk radio immediately bought into the McConnell position, and those moderate Republicans across the country in states like Ohio and in Pennsylvania and in New Hampshire, I think they felt that they had no choice because they couldn't afford to alienate the base of the Republican Party as they go into what is going to be a very contentious election year for them already.
Well, I'm sure you're right, Richie Neal, but here's the deal. At least six of those senators, Republican senators, are in the fight of their lives. The American people aren't going to like this, are they?
Oh, they're not going to like it, and they shouldn't. I think that the president says correctly that there is still 11 months to go in his administration. He does not become a lame duck president until after the November election, in which a successor has been duly elected. And he is constitutionally obligated to perform all of his duties right up until January 19th of next year, in anticipation of the 20th being the day when the new president's inaugurated. So I watch this with very little surprise, to be honest with you. I think it's the manifestation now of years of ill will that is blowing across Washington and the country. And I think that the federal courts have become more and more the battleground now for political principles. And I think that the president here would be derelict in his duty if he were not to send a name up.
So now we're hearing about a Republican governor of a Spanish background who was almost unanimously confirmed by the Senate when he was a federal judge. How can they turn their backs on that one?
Well, I also think it's a very clever strategy by the White House.
It is.
To fulfill their obligation. And I think that the president's at least publicly speculating that Governor Sandoval might be a worthy successor to Justice Scalia would strike me as being entirely reasonable if he were to contemplate that.
Well, I just think that it, with all those guys up there running for the Senate, they're taking their lives in their hands. If they're going to be quoted as saying, we went along with this and we said that we're not going to give an up or down vote on this, that they risk alienating a lot of people.
Well, I can understand them saying that they're not going to guarantee how they're going to vote up or down, but I can't understand them saying that there won't be hearings and that there won't be the customary elementary courtesies extended to a nominee to the court where that individual would have a chance to visit with members of the Judiciary Committee, which is a very long part of custom here in Washington. And even if that individual was to be denied your vote down the road, you always would greet them with the proper regard.
Richie Neal, I got 4 minutes left in this segment. I wanted to ask you real quickly about your thoughts about why Donald Trump is so has the number of people who say that they like him. I mean, I'm finding this very difficult.
Well, I find it difficult as well, but I can also say that for those of us who drill down on the data that comes out of these primary contests and the polling data that is endlessly in front of us every moment, that you can see that the pattern that has emerged, he's doing very well with moderate and lower income American voters. And what's noteworthy, I think, in terms of making the connection is that you can see that part of the phenomena is what has really now been downward pressure on wages for the better part of the last 12 to 15 years. And I think that many of the people that show up for Trump events, they are people who feel as though they've been left behind in this economy. Now, it's much more complicated, as you know, but the worker participation rate is not something that can be easily denied, and that is that you now have 8 to 9 million people who have left the workforce. You have economic growth that has been generally at about 2 to 2.5%, and that really is not enough to sustain the kind of wage gains that are necessary. And even as the labor market is tightened, wage gains have still been fairly modest. So I think that the intensity of the crowds for Donald Trump and the votes that he's getting, in some measure, they're mirrored by what's happened on the Democratic side with Senator Sanders as well. And I think there's a great deal of economic frustration across the country. Now, part of it is skill set, part of it is globalization, and part of it is technology. Technology has created greater efficiencies in the economy, and employers are not going to hire one more person than they absolutely need. So I think that all of these issues are coming home to roost. And when you look at the polling data that comes back, it is very clear that individuals who are asked if they are angry, moderately angry, or just a little bit angry, that people that are very angry are showing up en masse to support Donald Trump.
Yeah, but anger is one thing. I get it. I think you're right. But what in the world makes them think Trump is the guy to alleviate their problems?
Well, I'm astounded by the number of times that he's been tripped up as he's been asked complicated questions about America's role in the world, for example, or even to speak to some of the domestic issues that are so pressing. But not to miss the point, he seems to always have a very ready emotional rejoinder to what people are having heartburn over. And it's clear that some of the positions he's taken, they've really scratched emotions with the American people.
You know, there's a lot of talk in the next 2 minutes we can do about the establishment. We're told that the Republican establishment is out to get him. Who's that establishment?
Well, I don't think that it would be an establishment that was out to get him. I think that it would be an establishment that would be more looking for an alternative to him. And I think that you can look to some of the past Republican presidential nominees. I don't think it was by mistake that former Governor Romney offered his condemnation yesterday, and where Senator McCain has spoken and Bob Dole has spoken. And I think that what you do have is there's a sort of test that individuals have to meet, I think, when they seek the nation's highest office. And that's really a vetting process where there is some necessity for peer review. And I think that in this case, what they're looking at correctly is the loss of the United States Senate, perhaps the loss of a number of governors across the country. And they're looking at the long-term consequence of nominating an individual whose incendiary rhetoric is meant to, at the moment, draw emotion. But remember, even though he's garnering somewhere in that vicinity of about one-third constantly of Republican voters, that's only about 15% of the American electorate.
Right. And one only can guess whether or not the other two-thirds who are for other people will come over to him, which he says they will do.
Well, there's been a Republican schism in America now that has really dated back to the Goldwater years, and it was the first time when Goldwater defeated Nelson Rockefeller. Many argued that it was the end of the Northeastern Republican establishment, and I think with the exception of campaign contributions, there's been some accuracy to it. I don't think that Northeastern Republicans have nearly the influence on the Republican Party that they once did.
I think you're right. As always, Richie Neal, a congressman from my district, the Massachusetts 1st District, of course, in office since 1989. Richie, when we come back, I want to ask you, because you're my go-to Irish guy, I want to ask you to explain a talk you and the mayor of Boston just gave.
Thank you, Alan.